Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Pure Hope with your host, Reverend Janice Hope Gorman. Hope is the name the angels gave Reverend Gorman. Help open planetary eyes. And that's what we hope to do on Pure Hope. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, hello, everybody, and thank you for listening to our program. The Pure Hope Show has given you an opportunity to talk to animal channelers and spirit guides. We've given you opportunities to listen to women and men who have had angel experiences, and they can talk to angels. We've given you an experience of many people talking about cultures and civilizations that live inside Gaia Mama Earth. Well, we are going to give you an eye-opening spin-around turn with artificial intelligence. Our speaker tonight, and who we're going to talk to a little bit about that, certainly is a person who has some information about that. We're going to give you an opportunity to talk to a rocket scientist that's really, really real. And the reason why I wanted to talk to him today about artificial intelligence, because if you feel like your future of AI is rapidly changing landscapes right now, and it is. It's AI, artificial intelligence, is accelerating at such what I consider a blazing fast pace that it's really tough to keep up with it, tough to understand what it is, if it's good, if it's bad, if it's evil. So this IA that we're talking about seems to be shaping my future, and I think that all of our futures across the globe nearly every other day in every industry across our nation and in the world as well. And so it can be, and it seems to be, a driving force that's emerging in technology through data entry, through robotics, through generating art at this time, through writing theses for college students. And roughly 44% of the companies in the United States are looking very, very seriously at making major investments in artificial intelligence and integrating it even more into their businesses. And so it seems likely that AI is going to continue to change the world, but how exactly? Is it evil? Is it good? Is it grand? Is it marvelous? And where is it coming from? So hopefully Dave the Mystic, who is on our program tonight, David Barnett, is going to be helping us with this topic. He is an energy medicine practitioner. He is a healer and an intuitive with over 35 years experience in Colorado. He has multiple technical degrees and is truly, truly a rocket scientist. In the early 1980s, Dave had at some point had a turning point in his life, like many of us have, that led him to a passion in discovering and developing his own unique gifts in multiple forms of energy healing. He embarked on a path of training in many, many modalities and developing conceptual understanding of how the different systems work, complement each other, and also support spirituality. Dave has gifts in healings, reading the Akashic records, energy and entity clearing, changing core beliefs, karma burning, discerning your spiritual gifts. Dave continually seeks out new modalities, learns and experiences them from their practitioners, and frequently highlights those on his weekly web radio show, which he has and has done for a long time. Dave is a strong believer in health issues, having many potential causes in different energy planes. Dave works with many spiritual guides and communicates with them freely. So Dave the Mystic is on the phone as we are listening to it in this here and now. Hi, Dave. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on again.
Well, you know what kind of got me into this a little bit is that you and I were on recently on a program with a young woman from Austin, Texas, and her name is Carrie Hummingbird. And so as she was interviewing me for my program, she had set for her thing. She said, "Wow, I just got done interviewing Dave the Mystic on artificial intelligence." And she says, "That was truly a ride." So I told her, I said, "Well, I know Dave. I'm going to get him on my program then and start asking him questions." So for our listeners, first, what was that turning point for you in your journey for us to get you to this place where you are at right now?
Well, I grew up being open to the idea of psychic phenomena. My mom became an astrologer, or started on that path, when I was in seventh grade and my parents had divorced. So I experimented with her in junior high and senior high because none of my older brothers would touch it. And then just kind of let it go a little bit. But at my 10th high school reunion, I ran into an old friend. And after beating around a bush, he finally disclosed that he was able to change electronics strictly through mental power. And we went to his house and he started giving me demonstrations. He walked me up to his electric meter and indicated the wheel on it, and the wheel spins in proportion to how much power you're using at that moment. And he said, "Do you see the rate of the wheel?" And I said, "Yeah." And he pointed at it and said, "Now," and it slowed by a third. And then he told me, "I did this to my mother's house several months ago, and her bills are still lower." Wow, okay, that's pretty cool. We went inside, and he had a black and white TV on rabbit ears. He put it on a snow channel, no channel there, no station, and points at the TV and says, "Now," and he tunes in a channel. We ended up, after a couple other demos in the house, we went out to his car, and we sat in his car, and it was idling, a conventional ignition. He had his hands and feet off all the controls, and he pointed at the engine and said, "Now," and he could slow the idle down to where the car was stalling, and he told me that he could stall other cars in traffic. And then the final demo that day is we went downtown to the radio station where he worked as a disc jockey. It was an FM station. High power, 50,000 watts, and we went in the back room where they have all the meters that give the transmitter health, and there's one digital meter there that was reading 99.6, and he said, "Yeah, 99.6% of the rated power of the station or the transmitter is going out the antenna right now," and it was very stable. It wasn't moving at all, and he said, "I can lower it, but I can't lower it very much or I'll trip the station off the air. So do you see how it's stable?" And I said, "Yeah, rock solid." And he points at the meter and he goes, "Now," and it drops to 99.2. So he just changed 0.4% of 50,000 watts with his mind power alone instantaneously. And over the years, we devised a bunch of other tests where he was always able to get an effect. He was able to scramble traffic light order on their sequence. He was able to scramble marquee signs on hotels. One time I was in the kitchen and we have a ceiling fan and it's slightly out of balance, so it has one of those annoying wobbles. And I told him about it. He said, "Well, I think I might be able to fix that." And he was in Wichita. I was here in Denver. And he said, "Tap the phone with the wobble beat." So I have an idea of what the beat is. And I did that. And pretty soon the wobble evened out. And, you know, I don't know how he did it, but coming back to Denver, I just felt that, okay, he's opened me up to the idea that there's a lot of things that my physics and my electrical engineering doesn't explain through conventional means, and I need to go find out what's going on. So I, with both feet, jumped into psychic development, different forms of healing training, energy healing. And I even joined a group that was called the Tibetan Foundation, which was channeling ascended masters. And I really went whole hog and did that on the side for a number of decades. And I had a nice opening from 2003 to 2007 between regular full-time jobs where I was doing consulting work for the Air Force. And a voice in my head came, or, you know, felt like God was talking to me, said, "You have all the money you need, all the time you need. go out and learn everything you can about healing. And so I spent that four-year period developing skills in about seven or eight different modalities of healing. My gifts in past lives came through. I had 2 years of mentoring from a Denver medium. Just all kinds of things really blossomed and opened up for me. And after that, I got a consulting job with a company in Houston, being their Denver rep for engineering services. And I continued doing the healing work on the side. And 2019, I left them altogether, as it had really fallen off anyway. And I could finally hang out my shingles, you know, that I didn't have anything to fear about people thinking an engineer was on the woo-woo side. So I was able to move forward.
That's so interesting. That is so interesting. Well, I myself, on this topic of artificial intelligence, I really have really no idea. And I know that you get information and you travel into the different parallel universes and the layers of energy. So what's up with what is happening on our planet at this time with AI going bonkers and a bit, like I said, blazing travels through us? What is it, good? Is it, are there pros and cons? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it a force for good or evil? Like, is it somewhere in between? So what do you know what's going on with this?
Well, I'll just kind of spew information in a variety of forms that have come to me as I've been thinking about this interview with you. One of the ones that comes to mind is I think companies have to do it. Probably some of your listeners remember a company used to be around called Kodak. Well, Kodak did negatives. They did film. They did printing papers for conventional photographic processes. They did not embrace digital cameras early enough, and therefore you don't see Kodak anymore. I mean, they're out there a little bit, but it's pretty much nothing. Their X-ray business has all gone electronic, so they have no more X-ray film business. And so I think that's what's confronting a whole lot of companies now, is that depending on what their markets are, what their products are, they've got to embrace it one way or another. The question is how much depth and what does it buy them and what are some of the cautions. I want to go back in time a little bit to a psychologist named B.F. Skinner, who pioneered learning theory, especially through what was called operant conditioning. He had a controversial thought. He said that everything that people decide to do is based on stimulus and response arcs. He made the proposal that humans do not have free will. And a whole lot of people said, oh, that's ridiculous. You know, I decided to pick up a cup of coffee. I pick up the cup of coffee. Well, in probably the 70s and 80s, when they started doing testing on the brain and what are called action potentials, things that correlate to when decisions are made, is very interesting because they found that your arm was reaching for the coffee before the cognition part of your brain could rationalize that it had decided that it wanted to sip a cup of coffee, which is kind of spooky, you know, where you say, well, does my body move and then I rationalize why it's moving this way? It seems counterintuitive, but, you know, the measurements seem to indicate that a lot of what you do happens, and then you justify it later. If somebody asks you, why did you just do that? And if you think about kids being highly impulsive, it makes even more sense for them. But, again, that may just be a factor that the older you get, the more you learn, and you have these built-in responses that are just automatic, but you think that they're voluntary. So we have that kind of weird perspective on it already, on what is intelligence and decision making. That, you know, we're not so, you know, Snow White in terms of how we do this process ourselves. we are still learning. I mean, there's wonderful theories that the brain is holographic, that parts of our memory are replicated throughout the brain, and so you can have some brain damage and still have those memories because they're in different parts of the brain. The brain is very special, and the fact that we're self-aware is just quite incredible. That self-awareness seems to be what is separating us from the machines. If we go way back to the 70s and the 80s, a language came out called Lisp, and Lisp was one of the first artificial intelligence languages to program in. And the main thing that distinguished Lisp from other languages is traditionally computers are all about ones and zeros. I don't care what language you're programming in. When you get down to the actual central processing unit, it only deals in ones and zeros. It doesn't know if you started out in COBOL or BASIC or Fortran. It doesn't know and it doesn't care. Those are compiled down to machine language so that the machine can use ones and zeros to carry out the process. The programming languages are a tool that humans can use to have ways to better understand how to program a computer. The computer doesn't care. Well, Lisp was a variant that came out, and it was quite different in that Lisp didn't rely on answers being either a 1 or a 0. There were gray areas on the answer. And it used these gray areas to come up with better ways to do things, such as if you're going to have a thermostat control a room and it's controlled by a computer, you'd rather have a gray area there where the heat or the cold didn't just slam on and off. There was some anticipation of how long do we have, how long does it need to be on, you know, things like this that, you know, for humans is, you know, quite easy to adapt to. Oh, well, you know, if I'm going to bed, I turn down the heat before I go to bed. Lisp could handle that much better than traditional programming. Lisp ended up migrating to the next level, which was called neural networks. And this was an attempt to replicate neurons in your brain. So you have about 86 billion neurons in your brain. Lots of interconnects there, maybe 1,000 interconnects off of each neuron. And these interconnects, these synapses, get formed and also trimmed with use and feedback and information coming in. And they say, well, that's a good system. That's how a computer could learn. So let's start using neural networks. And that's evolved, but that's still basically what they're doing. And so the big thing now is that computers have a way to use feedback to adjust their response. So to give you a simple example of feedback, take your toilet tank. So you flush your toilet and the water goes down, and then the water starts filling the tank, and then the float raises up on top of the water surface and closes the fill valve. And it stops filling, so it doesn't overflow. That's negative feedback. So when the water comes up, it stops. If it's positive feedback, the higher the water got, the faster the water would rush in. So that's positive feedback. It encourages more of that activity. Negative feedback slows down or stops the activity. So these modern computer programs, they use tons of feedback. And now one way to get it is you can get it from rules from people where they might create great big charts of rules and say, okay, computer, take these in. This is your set of rules or what they call heuristics. But it's been found to work even more spectacularly when if you're teaching a computer a game, you let the computer play itself. So it takes on two different personas. And then develop strategies. And a lot of the strategies that have been developed this way have surprised the humans who are experts on those games. Like in the game of Go, it's a game that's more popular in Asia, but a big tableau of a grid, and you use white and black stones, and your attempt is to encircle the opponent and to take his stones off the board. They said there's more options of play on Go than there are atoms in the universe. So that tells you that. So you have to develop a strategy. And the machines learning how to play Go at the expert level just played themselves and played themselves and played themselves and tried different things without people telling it, well, here's the goal, what you ought to do in this situation or that situation. That's a little bit different than the history of the computer Blue, Deep Blue or whatever, who played chess. Deep Blue's strategy was it could just look millions of moves ahead on the outcome and look at the probabilities and pick the most likely one to win. And so it wasn't really developing strategies. It was just looking at what's the optimum way to win based on the outcomes. With Go, you can't do that. There's too many outcomes. So it had to develop strategies. So that was quite different. Now, here's one of the issues we have today, though, that you've seen in the past year or two, are people complaining that when they apply for a job, they don't get selected, and it's because they've run up against an AI type of device that they feel unfairly kicked them out of consideration. And in some cases, they're probably right, because here's what the problem is. So you let the computer use this feedback and learn what makes a good candidate, what makes a good employee, what makes this and that. What if they get a correlation to a racial type? The first problem that you have is when you say, okay, computer, I want you to spit out the rules that you're using and the weighting factors. And frequently the way that these rules are built up, it can't do that in a succinct fashion. And so then it becomes very difficult either way to say that there's a particular characteristic that might be proscribed by law for considering candidates. And that's one of the real scary places that we're getting to is that people will be, you know, just knocked out of consideration by non-human forces that can't explain their rationale. And that is a little bit scary. You know, look, if I'm going to go apply for a job, I want to make it through the first gate, and then I want to talk to a human and show them why I can do that job well and why they should hire me. And if you can't get through that first gate because you've been pre-screened and against criteria that the company can't explain themselves, then something's very scary about that. So now I'll let you talk because I've talked and talked.
Well, no, I find that fascinating because there's no denying that there are lots and lots of benefits to using AI. And I think that there is, that's the reason why it is becoming as popular as it is, and that technology in many ways makes our lives more better and easier, although that there is some ethical problems with what we are facing today. I can remember going into, let's say, a place like Walmart, where every line was run by a person. And now when you go into Walmart or many places, now there's only one or two people, live people, who are checking you out. And the rest of them is just filled with checkout. And it's funny because when my son would go to places and he would say, Mom, I never go to those machines because they're checking you out. They are adding up how much you spend on this and that. They know exactly what you want. Plus, they're taking jobs away from the live people. And pretty soon, there's not going to be enough jobs for the live people. And he thought of that way before I thought about that. And I see that more and more and more. Even like I went to the grocery store at Aldi's, and there used to be live people there. There's only one live person who's checking out groceries, and the other ones are all machines. So, and even like with the art that the AI is doing, that it's almost in some ways taking over the world. And so I didn't know, again, you know me, I'm always thinking like, is there something, some group, someone, whether it's on the planet, whether it's through the Illuminati or whether it's off of this planet, that is trying to take over the world and really take our thinking caps off of us and having this happen. So what's your look on that, the ethical, moral, and like, is it procreated, being procreated by a group of people who are trying to take over the world in some ways, or off of this world that it's coming to, you know, that's the type of question you and I could discuss forever, but I thought you would know the answer more than I do.
Well, I like muscle testing. If I see that, if I look at where we are right now as being, what percentage is to push off planet, I'll say, 10, 20, 30, 25, 24, 23. I get 23% of the push for this is off planet. If I get asked for what is to push by hidden groups, occult groups, whatever you want to call them, the money groups, 10, 20, 30, 25, 24, 23, 22, 21, so 21%. If I look how much is inadvertently or deliberately being pushed by governments because they see as much better way to track people and control things, 10, 20, 30, 40, 35, 34, 33%. So I heard an interesting thing. It kind of falls into the AI a little bit, but I was talking to a highly educated woman in Brussels, and she feels that apparently there's a push or a requirement in Britain now that every newborn baby has a genetic sample taken. And she says she thinks that that lack of respecting human rights is what is the major cause why Britain had to do Brexit, to leave the European Union, because they wouldn't comply with the European Union's regards to privacy. And that would bother me highly, too, is that suddenly you have a database of every citizen in the country of genetic material. That's just so intrusive, but Britain and Canada and Australia and their legal systems aren't highly oriented towards individual rights, you know, like other countries they had to fight for, like France. And so that falls right into the hands of artificial intelligence, you know, to come up with ways to know who you are. I mean, you know, we're getting so fast on gene sequencing. You know, I don't think we're too far away from cops having a sniffer that if they go to a crime scene, you know, the sniffer picks up and says, well, I got this DNA, I got that DNA, I got a skin flake here, a drop of blood there, and here's the list of people. You know, we aren't too far away from that. And, you know, things like that can also be subject to mistakes and abuse and the good things on AI is, again, it's massively smart. It's going to really play a big role in reading all the scans you have for potential cancers, whether they're PET scans or x-rays. They're already making significant inroads where the machines can do in a matter of minutes what it might take a doctor an hour and a half or several hours to do. And their accuracy is at least as good as, in many cases, a doctor or better. So things like that. And we have that little surgical device, I think they call it the Da Vinci or whatever, that's doing surgery under remote control, but it's aided, and it allows them to be less invasive and more precise. One of the surgeries that comes to mind is doing like a prostate removal, and you know, how much residual damage they do in the surgery. Apparently it's less with this device. So these things are all good. I think the big thing that hasn't happened yet and is one of the existential question marks is, what happens when a machine becomes self-aware? And
well,
I think what one of the main things that a machine needs to be self-aware is to have a vision capability that works on identification. And the machines are getting fast enough now, if you look at self-navigating cars, that the vision recognition stuff, that component seems to be there. So the science fiction view is when the first machine becomes self-aware, it will immediately propagate its code capability to every machine it can touch to create a whole army of self-aware computers. And, you know, there's no telling what set of ethics it might have because it would clearly have different interests than humans. I mean, the good news is, you know, anything to do with, like, weapons of mass destruction such as nukes are isolated from any type of internet connection. They're physically isolated, so you can't just, you know, drop some code in that's malicious. But there's plenty of other things that could affect. I mean, well, transportation, you know, your imagination can run wild what it could do. Would it see that there's a symbiotic relationship with humans that, you know, robots and computers aren't necessarily at a point yet where they could take over replicating themselves from raw materials all the way through finished product? You know, if you take humans out of that, then, you know, integrated circuit chip production goes away. Now, down the road, will that become automated with AI? Yeah, probably much better than it is now. And more fully, but right now it requires people who watch the wafers coming off a line, and they adjust the knobs on gases and keep an eye on it 24 hours a day. They can't just turn it on and let it run. So there's complicated factors like that. And but when you get into, well, I'll say more of the mundane jobs and how they're thinking, then yeah, that becomes much scarier for the average Joe on the street. You know, will I have a job next year? And even going on up into the professions, like you're mentioning, art, people write copy for ads. I don't know. I could see you buying a package that's ministerial sermon generation, and you give it to verses in the Bible that you want to talk to, and it scours the databases and writes a very credible, you know, you just, well, how many minutes do you want it to last? Oh, I want 15 minutes of material. Okay, and you got it, and boom, there it is. You know, you see any tweaks you'd like, you know, to put in your own stories. Okay, boom, you're ready to go, and we can't be very far away from that.
Well, I think we have that because, you know, our family has, you know, Sunday Fun Day, and I forgot what the program or the app was, but they're talking about these apps that have been writing theses for people who were graduating with their professorship or their doctorate.
Uh-huh.
And even Melissa, my sweet Melissa, who works here at the Hope Interfaith Center, she had said that she is a professor at, knows someone who is a professor at a college that says, I am fully aware that there is a student that might be using AI to develop all of his reports. I have no way to prove it, but I believe that, you know, he's doing that. And, you know, how do you grade something like that versus a person who's not doing that? It just seems like there's something happening that is, we need to be a little bit more weary of it or aware of it. So when you said we're in trouble when, maybe that's not exactly how you put it, but if one of these robots became self-aware, is that even possible?
Based on where we are right now, even with the level of power of our processors, it doesn't seem to be. But you just never know, you know. And they have that thing called the Turing test where Arthur Turing created it, and they're still looking toward the grand prize, but the idea that you can talk over a monitor and a keyboard to something in the other room, and can it convince you that it's not a computer, or can you not tell the difference? You can't decide whether it's human or computer. And they've already awarded the second place. They've passed that level. They're just looking for the first place. But so it's not quite there yet with a skilled interrogator, but it's getting closer and closer. Now, again, you look at what does it take to make a human consciousness, and we need to have some type of visual field that gives us information. We need to have extensive memory. We need to have extensive processing capability, and maybe socialization. But I don't know. If you can get something where you say it is now self-aware versus just mimicking it, because it has rules inside that says things like we would expect to say out of our ego, that we have a sense of the need for self-protection. And now you're getting down to the road where Isaac Asimov was writing science fiction, and I think he had like the three classic rules of robotics. One is, you shall not hurt humans, those types of things that had to be hardwired into all the machines. But the scary part for me is with autonomous drones that can be programmed to seek out through facial recognition specific targets for assassination, then that really gets scary to me, that people would develop weapons like that and that would be allowed. But that's certainly in the realm of possibility, and we do have autonomous drones that do things that we probably don't hear about, in war zones. It's very easy to make a simplified drone that you just create a no man's land. It just patrols, and if it sees anybody moving, boom, they're dead. And end of story. No discrimination. Doesn't matter whether it's a child or a woman trying to get groceries. Doesn't matter. And so to me, that's pretty immoral. But that's certainly easily possible now. What's harder is the discrimination. But even with that, it just continues to build up. But are they self-aware? No, I don't think so. Can they get there? I'm not sure. Here's the next tier of what's happening. They have these computers that are super cooled, and they're called quantum unit or qubits. And now, I talked about how traditionally computers work with a one and a zero. Well, a qubit works with the quantum states of an atom. And so those quantum states may have many possible different states all at the same time. And then you can use that capability to say, rather than just having a one or a zero, maybe I have a digit that represents 15 different states or something. And these qubits are so powerful that they're going to enable the users of those who put a number of these units together to just about crack any encryption system we have. I don't care if you have a 56-bit system or a 124-bit system or pardon me, whatever. They'll just crank right through it, whereas it's computationally impossible for our traditional computers now. But these qubits can do it. And there's some people who are afraid that when you tie qubits to something like CERN with their accelerators, that we might be opening up portals into other worlds, other universes, and they kind of paint a doomsday scenario. So if you're really into big, scary things, that's another one to worry about.
Oh, that's interesting, because even when you say you have you're a strong believer in health issues having many potential causes in different energy planes.
Yes.
So let's talk, and I think that, I don't know if that connects with AI at all or transference, but what, when I read that, what does that mean when our audience is listening to that? What does that mean?
Well, I see us as we walk through life in our human bodies as being actually spread out informationally to many other places, particularly with our other lives. And so I see us as having a lot of connections to our past lives. In my view of the world, our past lives are still ongoing. They're just on different timelines. And in some cases, what happens to them in terms of injuries or illness may be passed on to us in an attempt for them to get help from us to take care of those issues. I also see that we have parallel lives around us that are created. When you make a significant decision in your life, you may spin off another copy. When you, Hope, decided to do A, and then you spun off Hopes in other universes doing B and C, and that way your higher self can get the experience of all the possibilities, all the options. And sometimes those other options that you didn't pick may lead to doom and despair and hardship that, again, may come back and affect us. We have future lives that already exist, and in some cases they may reach back and try to gently urge us not to do something incredibly stupid like, you know, please don't use meth. You know, meth is bad stuff. That has long-term energy effects on all of us, so please don't do that. That's a crazy idea. This can come from many many different directions. So that's sort of what I'm talking about on that.
Hmm.
There are also people who talk about time loops, time bending, different things with time where sometimes I feel that it's possible to get healing by moving you to an adjacent timeline where you don't have the illness, and yet the reality seems like it's not like you're abandoning this one and moving to a different one. It's just that something has shifted, so you're in a reality that doesn't require you to have that illness. And so I know some healers who specialize in that. Shirley was one of those when she was with us. So there are a lot of different things, I think, that can affect you from different energy planes, different forms of existence that can still have an impact on us here.
So when you read a person, if she mm-hmm. or he has an illness, let's just say cancer, if someone comes to you and says, mm-hmm. can you help with this healing, even if it's coming from another lifetime? Or how do you zoom mm-hmm. in to check that out in a person?
Well, I kept running into this where I would get clients, and I kind of joke about what the implication is, where they show up and they say, well, I've tried everything else. You know, is the unsaid word there or words, I have nothing to lose by coming to you then, you know?
That's true, yeah. I can see
you know,
why people would say that.
I take it in stride. It's like
right.
the statement, well, if you lost something, you'll find it in the last place you look. Well, of course, you aren't going to look any further. Yeah, that's kind of logically obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But based on the idea that I do end up with clients who've got something going on health-wise, and they've tried other approaches, including Western medicine and alternatives, I finally created a worksheet that has about 15 different categories on it of things that I muscle test on their behalf in terms of what issues they might have. Let me pull up my worksheet real quick, and I'll read some of them to you. They're kind of interesting. A couple of them are kind of humorous almost. So one that I run into occasionally with people is, and Edgar Cayce warned against this, and that's raising your vibrations faster than the body can assimilate or tolerate. Edgar Cayce felt that a number of people, their vibrations had gone up so fast that it essentially blew fuses in their nervous system. And so he was cautionary about how fast people do their spiritual progress without some protections or some oversight. Another one I have is oaths in previous lifetimes. I found people who in a previous lifetime, maybe they worked for the king and the king ordered them to do something very immoral. And they said, you know, I'd rather have my leg cut off than go out and do that. You know, I just, and then I couldn't walk out there and do it. And the king says, okay, let it be. And they get their leg cut off. And I end up with somebody who has leg issues. And I find out that they have one of these things going on. Things to do with your life chart, sort of the blueprint or the flow chart that defines how your life is going to lay out, where you're going to have challenges and opportunities. Sometimes with people, it's indicated that I should go talk to the Council of Elders about possibly updating the chart because there are issues on there that are much more severe now to the person's enjoyment of their life or having this be a useful life that weren't anticipated when it was first laid out before they were incarnated. Another one is, I run into this a lot with healers, especially new healers, taking on someone else's illness to help them. A lot of healers get into this for the best reasons, but they become energetically involved with the client, and they may say, I would do anything for this person to heal, and the universe says, anything? You really mean it? And suddenly we see the condition of the client showing up in the healer. And so sometimes that happens. One I get, sometimes people have a life chart that they're going to help others in their experience by seeing them with illness. You see this a lot in children where they come up with these horrific brain cancers. And the purpose of that brain cancer is not for that child to be healed. The purpose of that brain cancer, where that child may pass at 10 or 11, is to provide lessons for the healers around them and for their family on watching them in their example and appreciating the value of their life and what they're doing with their life. And, I mean, some of these little girls have started charities to raise money for cancer research that, have ended up producing millions of dollars. That never would have happened if they hadn't had the cancer. So there's other things going on. So not all illnesses are meant to be healed, or I would say that healing comes in many different forms, and that may even include somebody passing away. Another one I have is sometimes people have things, I call it the spiritual kick in the rear, to get moving and grow. They've become complacent. They've really settled back in their life. They've avoided challenges. They've avoided doing new things. They're just kind of marking time. And sometimes the universe says, enough of that nonsense. Get off your butt and get moving. And how do you do that? Well, sometimes you make them, you give them a severe health challenge, and then they start to appreciate life a lot more after they come through it. Another one, sometimes I just check because I do a lot of clearing work. Sometimes people have an earthbound spirit in them where they're starting to pick up the symptoms of what the person who died had going on in their life. And the earthbound spirit doesn't know that this energy is transferring to them, but sometimes it does, and it becomes problematic. You know, if somebody died of emphysema and then they get around somebody else and really get involved in their energy field, that person might start having difficulty breathing, choking, things like that. And it's really not due to organic illness in them. It's just showing up because they have this earthbound around them. And there are several others, but that's where I go, you know, on these multidimensional things to look where else this is coming from.
So why do you think they call artificial why they call it artificial intelligence? What's the difference between the artificial intelligence, which is highly intelligent, and even the information or the guidance that you're able to get? What is the difference between artificial intelligence and what you just explained to us of how you can tap into these different planes?
I would say that artificial intelligence at this point, as far as we know, does not have a mechanism where spiritual plane information guides others can inspire thoughts or thinking or impressions, whereas in humans it can. I download a lot of information when I'm working with clients. When I'm looking at somebody, all of a sudden I'll get a hit on where in their body something is going on. I just don't see that pathway happening for machine intelligence for a long time. I don't see the machines as getting induced information like that.
Okay. So really the bottom line is that we don't have anything to fear but fear itself, maybe that line with the artificial intelligence.
Yeah. I think with the worst case scenario, the machines becoming self-aware, I think that's the risk that Elon Musk and the others have as their secondary fear. Their primary fear is with artificial intelligence becoming so prevalent in decision-making and business and everywhere else that I think you do run a risk that the population might rise up and reject it. And because they just say, we're not willing to live with this technology. It's got to be limited. It's got to be contained. It is ruining lives. And I don't care what the profit incentive is. You know, it would be very separating in our society in terms of the haves and the have-nots. It would really raise the bar on how many people become have-nots if it really becomes pervasive in our workplace for anything other than what you would say are strictly labor jobs.
Yeah, because I know that currently Google, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, the people who are in that higher echelon and make that gap between the rich and the poor, that they are highly investigating and investing in bringing AI into their corporations. And so so that's where see the problem.
You buy house homeowner insurance and you buy car insurance, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not too far down the road that you don't need to have a live agent. You don't need to have an administrator in that office to talk to. You can be interviewed by AI, and it will draft several policy options for you that it thinks, based on your risk, are appropriate. And if you get into a wreck, there might be a human initially to take notes on their clipboard about where the damaged items are, but eventually AI cameras may get in there and be able to compare your car to a new model of the car, see where the damage is, and do the estimates. And you know, bing, bang, bong, you know, pretty soon. We don't have an insurance industry except for, you know, board of directors and a couple executives in a main office, and everything else is done by AI. Don't need a brick and mortar. Don't need humans. They're redundant. And, you know, insurance people are typically, when they've been in the business for a while, they're highly paid. Realtors could be the next one to topple in that. You know, you have AI evaluate all the statistics on the house, all the videos and everything. And if it gets smart enough, it'll be able to tell you what it's worth. And, do you still need that human touch for somebody to show people around? Yeah, but that could become just a contractor, not really a realtor. You know, you just sort of see the worst-case scenario for a whole lot of what you think are either trained or skilled professions evaporating.
Yep. That's what I see. So what is your genuine, authentic outlook for where the world is and where our sweet world is going to? I know you're pretty optimistic always, but I think that lots of people who listen to our program, when it comes to angels or talking to animals or saving Gaia Mother Earth or climate change, AI, or whatever it is, I think that most people are at this time concerned of where our world is going right now. So what's your outlook and what are you receiving as we move forward in this time of great change?
It all keeps coming back to me that we're in a time of great change because we're looking at a major rise in vibration. And I think all of these factors are there to shake people out of their complacency and get them involved and get them onto a path of getting a moral stance. I think the world is not served by all these people wandering around saying, I'm a victim, throw money at me, make me feel good, call me the right name, all this. There's so many people who are playing blame games and victim games rather than taking a moral stance. I think we're being pushed like this severely, whether it's AI, whether it's genetic manipulation of viruses, things like that that put us at risk, whether it's warfare, whether it's pollution, all these things. I think they're there spiritually to force people to come out and get involved and to decide as a group that we want a path forward that gets results and leads to a better world. And I think that movement where we try to get consensus rather than everybody saying, well, what about me? You know, it's like, well, hang up on that. You know, let's look at what's better for everybody. And quit playing, you know, what's best for me, whether it's politicians, whether it's people on the street, who cares? And so I see all this as being sort of a spiritual pressure for people to grow up, mature, develop a strong moral sense, and get back on track as we're moving into the age of Aquarius. So, It seems painful, but, you know, a baby being born is painful, but it sure is happy to pop out and be in the light, you know?
That's right.
So
that's right. Mm-hmm.
We're just coming down the chute right now, and it doesn't feel very good. But I see it as getting past some hurdles here, and where people have to buy into moving forward as a species.
I do too. It's certainly ramping up in all areas right now to make us make a decision about how we want to show up and what's the best version of your best self even look like. And I think even the holies of holies, you know, that the gurus of the world who say, I'm a guru, I think that they're even being pushed down and saying, am I still yet the best version of my best self showing up all the time?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think. I'm being pushed down that chute of just asking, is this my best version of my best self showing up to my neighbors and my family and my grandchildren and my clients and the world at this time? So, and I find that good. So, rebirth. This is the time of spring, so it is about rebirthing, that's for sure. So,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, when our listeners, if they're interested in getting connected to you for a healing or an exorcism or all the different things, I know that you do house clearings and business clearings and things like that, and so much more. How can our listeners get a hold of you, Dave, if they want to get a hold of you?
The best way is to jump on my website, davethemystic.com. And there's a little box there where they can send me an email that says that they're interested, and it just provides some details for contact purposes, and then I'm happy to connect with them.
Okay, and how about your radio show, your blog talk show? How can they, I was just listening to some of them the other day and said, well, I would like to follow you, but I don't know how to do that. So how can radio show?
Yeah, blogtalkradio.com/Dave the Mystic. So very
okay.
Easy, and Monday nights at 8 p.m., although I confess that due to an illness over the weekend, I didn't do one last night, and next Monday I'm going to be on travel, so I'm not doing one then. But on the 24th I'm resuming, so it'll be there.
And how long have you been doing your shows, did you say?
Since about 2010.
2010, wow, yep. Yep,
yeah, so
when
there's,
I decided
there's over
to do 600, this year.
Over 600 shows to listen to.
Wow. Are they all archived then?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I got a special deal through Blog Talk because supposedly on my my plan, but I think I've been grandfathered in, but my plan is only supposed to allow you to archive like 100 or 150 shows, but they haven't squawked on mine, so all mine are still there.
That's good. That's good. Well, Dave, thank you for being on the program. I know that you have a tight schedule, and you and your beautiful bride are going on a cruise. So I wish you well, and I thank you for getting me in there and being on the Pure Hope Show to kind of discuss this issue on AI. And for our listeners to be able to talk to and listen to a real live rocket scientist. So I love that about you. I love that about
you.
So thank you
so much. You're a dear one.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Have fun. And I thank all of our listeners who are listening today. Just as Dave said at the Pure Hope Show, we also have our programs archived. I don't think we have as many programs, but all of our programs are archived, waiting for all of you precious listeners to tune in to various wonderful speakers and interviews that we've had on this program. So I thank you for being on the air with me. Until we meet again, namaste, 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 everyone. Good night.
Goodbye.
Bye, Dave.
Thank you for tuning in to Pure Hope by Reverend Janice Hope Gorman. And until next time, remember that true greatness consists in being great in the little things. Be kind. Be gentle. Be loving. Be true.